morning.
Good morning. Stephen Rosenbaum, appearing for Aera Energy and Noble Energy. This is a challenge to an administrative decision terminating four oil and gas leases. This court has repeatedly held that administrative decisions are invalid if political pressure intruded into the calculus of considerations or shaped the determination of the merits, as this court so held in Volpe and Kiewit and ATX.
Right, but in all those cases, we've given the agency an opportunity to correct the problem, that is, to produce a non-tainted decision.
In all of those cases, Your Honor, it was uncertain what the decision would have been absent the undue political influence, and accordingly, the court had no choice but to give the agency an opportunity to present, to create an untainted decision. In this case, it's different, Your Honor. That is to say, in Volpe, there was concern that perhaps there had been undue political influence, the same in, for example, Pillsbury, the same in Koniag. This decision is different because there was a hearing held at which there was specific testimony elicited as to, A, whether or not undue political influence had been brought to bear on the decision of the regional director.
Well, but those decisions you decided are all based on the assumption that there was inappropriate political influence brought to bear.
No, Your Honor. In all of them, they were cases in which there was indicia that made the court concerned that there might have been undue political influence, but that's all. And in none of those cases was there any evidence to determine what the decision would have been absent that political influence.
Here, the government makes the argument that the board's decision in 2005 is the dispositive decision here in terms of saying what the options were. You could have a remand or you could have a new evidentiary hearing because it wasn't clear what the regional director's reasoning was or the basis for his decision. Doesn't that distinguish those cases?
Well, I mean, it does in the sense that it allowed us to go forward and present to the administrative law judge testimony and other evidence by the regional director himself, where he explained why he had made the decision he had made, namely that it had been the result of undue political influence, and what his decision would otherwise have been, namely that otherwise he would have decided to leave the leases in the unit and therefore be preserved. That is a factual scenario where you had direct testimony by the decision maker that exists in none of the other cases. And it's not merely a question of the regional director having so testified, it's a question of the administrative law judge having made the specific findings, having heard that testimony and all other testimony, that the testimony by the regional director, to the effect I've just recited, was unrebutted, credible, and convincing.
But he also found independent evidence that the exclusion of the leases from the units was supported by scientific evidence.
He did, but right. the question presented here is when you have a decision that is under the regulations within the control of the Pacific Regional Office, which these decisions are, and you have testimony which is accepted by the ALJ and by the IBLA, because the IBLA in turn accepted all of the ALJ's findings. When you have unrebutted testimony by the regional director, found to be truthful by the ALJ, unrebutted, credible, convincing, those are words from the ALJ's findings. The IBLA then adopts them in toto. The question is whether at that point one now knows what the untainted decision would have been. And our view is that at that point, having found those things, we were entitled to...
That the board had no authority to make a decision on its own.
Well,
that has to be your argument, doesn't it?
Well, I think our argument is that the thrust of this court's decisions have been that one should achieve a result as to what the result would have been absent the undue political influence. And under these, and given that being what we understand the court's rulings to dictate, then under the facts of this case, there was no, we won the case at that point.
But what distinguishes your case from Koniag and the Three Sisters Bridge case and these other cases is that in your case, there was the testimony, number one, that it was politically motivated, and number two, what the result would have been but for that. That's the way you're distinguishing those cases.
There's that, and let me, there's one more important point, which is that in this circumstance, had the regional director made the decision that he would have made absent the undue political influence, namely to preserve the leases, no one could have appealed that to the board. That is an important distinction as well, because take, for example, the Koniag decision. In Koniag, there were injured parties, so to speak, on both sides of the issue. No matter how the BIA in that case had resolved the matter, it was going to be appealed to the secretary. And under those conditions, you had to have a secretarial decision.
So the board...
This is different because you have to be a, quote, aggrieved person adversely affected, excuse me.
Suppose that instead of Reed having responded to political pressures, that he had ordered the exclusion of the leases because, say, for example, he felt that, say, for example, he falsely believed, he mistakenly believed that foreign corporations couldn't own leases and that your clients were owned by foreign corporations, okay?
Yes.
All right. Would the result be the same?
Well, no. We would have appealed that decision, presumably, on the grounds...
Just like here?
If his decision had been reversed...
Exactly the same thing. In other words, he had done exactly what he did there, here. He took exactly the same action he did in this case, except instead of for political reasons, he did it because he misunderstood the standard. And he testifies that had he understood it properly, he would not have excluded them from the units. Now, would you be arguing the same thing?
I probably would be, I think, Your Honor. I mean, that's to say, would I be saying once the IVLA found that his decision was based upon a false legal understanding, I would be arguing that meant that we would win the case.
Even though the leases based on objective evidence should have been excluded from the unit. In other words, you would be asking the court to order the department to permit a lease that's clearly inconsistent with its own standards.
Well, I'm presuming under your scenario that the regional director had made a finding that, but for the foreign ownership, he viewed the criteria for preservation of the leases to be satisfied. If he had said that, then I think our position would be.
So you see no way in which an agency on its own can correct an error of this kind?
I think the agency we had to go to the Interior Board of Land Appeals to create the factual record to demonstrate why the decision was made and what the decision otherwise would have been. I think the agency did provide a mechanism for correction. We think they reached the wrong conclusion based upon once they had made the factual conclusions that they had made.
But under your theory, I'm not sure I understand. Under your theory, once the agency takes an inappropriate factor into account, it can't correct that error. That's what you're saying. And that's completely inconsistent with our cases.
I think I'm suggesting that once, recall, Your Honor, that it's not merely that there was a finding that the undue political influence had been brought to bear. There was also a finding, this is finding 43, that it was logical, reasonable, and not uncommon for the Pacific region to allow a unit to be maintained under these conditions. So we have a situation here where there are factual findings, not only as to the undue political influence.
But that's not what the board concluded.
Well, it's true that the board went on to conclude in its own mind that it was negative on the prospectivity of the leases. And the question presented is whether or not that's appropriate under a circumstance where they would never have been looking at the issue at all but for the unlawful political influence, because the matter would never have gone to the board. The regional director, we have decided to preserve the leases, and that would have been it. As I say, no one could have appealed. Indeed, the factual situation here is actually more extreme in that there was not even a reason for the regional director to be looking at the prospectivity of the leases. There was no application pending before him that required him to look at the issue at all. It was only because of undue political influence that the matter was even on the table. So it's we sort of have a two-fold.
I mean, you're sort of saying, look, you've got to restore to what it is, because had it not been for this inappropriate political influence, we never would have been caught. That's what you're saying.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
No, no. The regional director testified at great length as to why he believed these leases should be preserved.
No, but the board ultimately concluded that there was no basis for preserving the leases on the basis of the seismographic and other evidence, the geological evidence. So you're basically saying to us, look, had it not been for that, the agency never would have discovered that, and therefore we should be restored to the condition we were in before.
I'm saying that the regional director had a different view as to prospectivity than the IVLA,
and
had it not been for the undue political influence, the matter would never gotten to the IVLA, and on two levels, namely that there would not have been any decision at all about prospectivity, and if there had been one, it would have been one that was positive for us. Of course, this is in the context also of the IVLA having made what the district court considered to be a separate but related legal error, which was thinking that it could rely upon the views of the subordinates of the regional director to conclude that undue political influence had not, in fact, played a determining role. This court's precedents don't allow that kind of reasoning. And so the IVLA decision itself is faulty on that score also.
Can I just ask you to treat two competing hypotheticals? One, where you have decision based on political intervention, and if we and it is clear that but for the political intervention, the only legal result would still have been the same. Okay, that's hypo one. Hypo two is there's been political intervention, and it can go either way. There is an entity in the Department of Interior which can exercise discretion and come out one way or the other. Does your argument encompass hypothetical one as well as hypothetical two?
When Your Honor says legal result would be the
now there are legal errors that of course aren't caught. I put that issue aside, but. Let's suppose that even though, but for the political intervention, if we just completely remove that, the only legally correct, technically legally correct result is anyway to exclude the leases from the unitization, okay?
Right.
Does your argument encompass that case?
No, I don't think so. I mean, if the leases are doomed under any circumstance, then the political influence
doomed
becomes
a legal matter. Although
doomed is a legal matter, then it's irrelevant.
Okay. So it's the combination of its being the exercise of discretion by a particular entity within Interior.
Yes.
And the knowledge of how that exercise of discretion would have come out, and the proposition that there would have been no. We can be confident there would have been no appeal.
Yes.
Okay. With that on the table, I have two questions. One is, how can we be all that confident? I mean, adversely affected is a slippery term. What if California, which at least later became very zealous in this matter, presented itself to the IBLA in a timely fashion and said, We're aggrieved. We don't like the environmental risks that inclusion of these four leases poses.
Well, Your Honor, I don't know that having failed. Well, they didn't.
I know they didn't in this case.
They didn't in this case. They didn't participate in any way in the question of whether the unit was going to be contracted or not contracted. I'm not sure they would have had standing at that point to complain to the IBLA about what happened.
That's a practical question. Does the adversely affected language include, as is the case for some agencies certainly, include appearance at the initial decision-making level?
I don't know the answer to that. I know in CONIAG, certainly, by contrast, there was participation at the earliest level.
And then,
but I don't think that the purpose of the unit agreement is to expedite exploration and development. I do not believe the state of California would have had standing to argue the question that would be relevant to that determination, because they had no interest whatsoever in expediting exploration or development, and so they would not have been adversely affected, in the manner contemplated by that decision.
Okay, then I have another question. That is, it became clear by the conclusion of the ALJ proceeding, including the ALJ's opinion, that there had been this, all the circumstances you claim had occurred. Did you, at that point, before the final IBLA decision, make the remedial argument that you're making here?
Your Honor, that's not how the process works. The ALJ issues his proposed findings under seal. We don't see them. They're submitted directly to the IBLA, and the IBLA issues its decision. That's the process. So we received literally a letter from the ALJ saying he had issued his proposed findings, but we did not see the proposed findings until the same day the IBLA decision itself was issued. We have it now, but we didn't have it. That's how their process works.
Okay, so there was no opportunity between the clarification of the facts and this proceeding here before this court for you to make that argument?
We had, I think the answer is yes, if I understand your question correctly. That is to say, we did not have that opportunity. That is to say, we did not know what findings the ALJ had made until after the IBLA had issued its decision, because the process is one by which that is a sealed document that's not provided to us or the government.
But let me be clear. I thought you did argue that the reason you were at, one of the arguments you made was that you wanted an evidentiary hearing because there was some denial that there was political influence, and that if at the hearing it was determined there was political influence, then you were entitled to have the original decision reinstated minus the political influence.
Oh, absolutely.
Based on the regional director's testimony. Oh, I mean, you made that argument.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, our statement of reasons, which is sort of our complaint, so to speak, said this decision was the result of improper political influence and should be reversed as a matter of law for that reason. We also asked for an evidentiary hearing, which was granted. We had the evidentiary hearing, which, to our view, and ultimately the view, I think, of everyone, confirmed our beliefs as to the improper political influence that had brought to bear on that decision. So we certainly advanced, the argument. You know, the statement of reasons cites to Volpe and ATX and all the decisions we're relying upon now. But I'd understand Judge Williams' question to be more focused on, once the ALJ had made the favorable findings, did we then have the opportunity to argue certain things to the IBLA? And my answer is no, because we didn't know what his findings were until after the IBLA issued its decision. That's their process.
I understand that now. Can I ask a question about your post-hearing brief, which the table of contents appears at 685 of the Joint Appendix? Now, it, at least as far as I can judge from looking at the table of contents, addresses the matter entirely in terms of the propriety of the decision without regard to political influence. Now, you had at that point, if I understand it correctly, the evidence that you now rely on, but am I right in thinking that in this document you don't make arguments based on that evidence?
That's not correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
I'll quote from it. The post-hearing brief says, quote, Dr. Reed's testimony established that the Santa Maria and Gatto Canyon units were involuntarily contracted as an attempt to politically appease the state of California.
I understand that, but what about the remedial issue?
Well, I think we were always of the view that we were entitled to restatement of the leases. And I think that's the ultimate.
Entitled to that as a direct result of the combinations that you present here, namely the political influence, and our knowledge as to how it would have come out otherwise.
Well, I think that's yes. I mean, I think that's implicit in the arguments that we advanced, which was that but let me say on this issue, I think you can look at the IBLA decision itself. If there's any doubt as to what they clearly understood this to be an issue for them to resolve. But and I'll quote from the IBLA decision. They say Samadan and Era, my client Samadan, now known as Noble, raised seven issues in their original appeal submissions, including, quote, the argument that, quote, the decisions to exclude the leases stemmed from improper political considerations. And then the IBLA says the issues raised by appellants in their original appeal submissions, which includes the argument I just captured, form the framework for our resolution of these appeals, end quote. And then the IBLA goes on to devote an entire section of their decision to the question whether improper political influence had led to the decision and whether that was grounds for us to win the case or not. So certainly the IBLA understood our argument to be as we had advanced it. They rejected it, of course, on grounds that the district court found improper, namely the fact that certain subordinates of the regional director that did not support the preservation of the leases.
I want to take you back to, I'm sorry, were you done with that, Steve?
Yeah.
Okay. I just want to take you back to the two hypotheticals Judge Williams gave you and make sure I understood your argument. Did I understand you say that in the second hypothetical, if in fact the leases were doomed, that is, that it was clear that they didn't belong in the units, that the case would be different?
As a matter, if they were doomed as a matter of law,
yeah.
I'm taking that to be very literal. I mean, for example, if the leases had a maximum term of 5 years and the leases were in their sixth year and there was no mechanism for extension, mm-hmm. then that would seem to me to be doomed leases. But if here the determination whether or not the leases should continue
right.
is explicitly subjected to the discretion of the regional director, who must consider, quote, all pertinent information, end
right.
quote,
but
in making
board,
that determination.
Right, but the board... the board at 8:32 reaches the following conclusion. The judge's fact-finding and record as a whole clearly demonstrate that the excluded leases do not contain potential hydrocarbon accumulations. So isn't that saying that these units are no longer qualified to be units?
No, because the regional director thought otherwise.
But he got reversed by the board. He got reversed by the board.
Well, but they shouldn't have been.
Isn't that what the board's supposed to do?
No, it's his decision. They can only reverse his decision with respect to parties that are adversely affected. There was no one adversely affected by his conclusion that these leases were still viable.
Didn't you argue before the agency that the board did have the authority to do this?
We never argued to the agency. We submitted what we called, and properly so, independent bases for reversal, independent reasons, like any good lawyer. We argued the political influence issue. We argued other issues. But we never, but I think if one, I think it's clear that we were saying that if there was a conclusion that these leases had been terminated because of undue political influence and would otherwise have been preserved, that we were entitled to win, and I don't think the IBLA ever suggested otherwise. If the IBLA had thought otherwise, they would never have spent the time they did on the political influence issue, which they addressed specifically along with our other arguments.
Why don't we hear from Appley?
May it please the Court, I'm Mary Gay Sprague for the Department of the Interior. I would like to go back to early 1999. The assertion is being made that without improper political influence, the Pacific region would not even have considered whether these leases should have been excluded from their units. The fact that MMS headquarters said to the region, we want you to apply the legal standard to the facts, can't be improper. There had been a lot of evidence developed since the units were formed in 1986 and 1987. The ALJ examined this extensively.
I'm sorry, what statement of MMS are you referring to? At what time?
Your Honor,
saying that MMS in 1999 said to the regional director, these leases ought to be excluded from the unit?
No. In early 1999, MMS headquarters told the region, we want you to look at all 40 undeveloped California leases. This is an appropriate time to examine under our legal standards whether all of these leases should remain in their units. The units had been formed back in 86 and 87, and in the subsequent years, there had been a lot of additional work, in particular seismic analysis.
Do we know why MMS made that proposal?
Your Honor, I believe we do, that all 40 of the undeveloped leases had been in suspension for 6 or 7 years because of this California Offshore Oil and Gas Energy Resources study,
right,
and all 40 leases were coming due for a decision at the same time. It is true that there was significant political opposition to offshore drilling off of California.
I mean, if I understand the petitioner's claim, it is that from day one, this arose out of political intervention. From that last remark, you appear to be agreeing.
Right. Your Honor, it is true that the decades of political opposition to the leases did lead to a decision in early 1999 to look at the evidence of whether these leases were properly included in the units. But that is not improper political influence to even ask the question whether the evidence is consistent with the legal standard at that point in time. The MMS regulations provided for reevaluation of whether leases were included in units at appropriate times. And this was an appropriate time because of the fact that all 40 were coming due at the same time. There had been significant seismic evidence developed since the units had been formed, as the ALJ described in his findings of fact and detail. And the staff was directed to take a look at the evidence. 36 of the leases were found to satisfy the legal standard of a strong possibility of hydrocarbon accumulations. The MMS wanted to ensure national consistency in the application of its regulatory standard, and so it dispatched two employees from the Gulf region to the Pacific region to work together to make sure the legal standards were being applied consistently.
Are you saying that the legal standards precluded the sort of judgment that Reed made, distinguishing between the Gulf and the Pacific, the particular distinction being that no new leases were ever going to be issued in the Pacific, while they were frequently being issued in the Gulf? That was unlawful under the regulation?
Your Honor, it was not consistent with the standard. The standard was that the leases needed to have a strong possibility of hydrocarbon accumulations, and this, the standard is applied depending where in the process you are. The standard is applied more leniently early in the exploratory process than at the end of the process, where you have all of the seismic evidence and evidence from wells that had been drilled that can be evaluated. The IBLA, in its decision, evaluated what the appropriate criteria were, looking at the purpose of unitization and going back to explanations of how that should be applied in the original promulgation of those regulations in 1980.
The particular regulation in question being which?
The regulation that authorizes the joining into units and the contraction from units, as the IBLA discussed in its decision at JA 820, 6, 7, 8, 9. It's looking at the legal standard of unitization.
What's your answer to their basic argument that but for this political influence, the agency never would have looked at the question of whether there was hydrocarbon accumulation?
Your Honor, I think
what's the answer to that question?
The answer to the but for this political opposition, they never would have even asked the question of whether these leases still belong in the units, is answered by this court's decision in ATX case, where there was an argument made that the decision of the Secretary of Transportation to hold a hearing on the subject of whether Frank Lorenzo should be permitted to operate ATX Airlines, this court very clearly said that that is not improper political influence. That's not what we're talking about. That if political influence causes a certain procedure to be afforded, that's not what we're talking about. That where it becomes improper is if it influences the decision on the merits after that process has been afforded. So the question.
Suppose a Democratic administration decides to go after the tax exemptions of Republican organizations, and it turns out they're right that none of these organizations are qualified for tax exemptions. No problem?
Your Honor, it might be. I think it would. What we have is that whether if there was a decision to look at the tax exemptions for all political.
No, that's not my question. No, that's not the case here, though. They went after just these.
No, that's not true, Your Honor. They looked at all 40 undeveloped leases off of California, which were owned, many of them, by ERA, a few by Noble, and others by other companies, I believe. They looked at all 40 of them and found that 36 of them had the significant evidence.
Your point is that if the initiation of the proceedings are politically motivated, that's not a problem, as long as the proceedings are handled objectively and consistent with the Administrative Procedure Act, right?
Correct, Your Honor. And there was no, as I say, there was no targeting of any particular lease, all 40 undeveloped leases. So the fact that MMS decided to look at all 40 leases is no basis for a claim of improper political influence. Then we need to go forward a few months to look at the decision that was made on the merits. And the evidence here is that after looking at all 40 leases, these four were identified as not having the significant evidence of hydrocarbon accumulations. That was the consensus view of the technical staff of the MMS.
But you don't dispute the district court's finding that the IBLA erred in saying that the people vested with authority to make the decision were uninfluenced by politics.
No, we don't dispute. The district court was correct in pointing out that the IBLA did not draft its decision as it should, because it's true.
Another way of putting that is that the IBLA rested its conclusion on a proposition that was not true.
Well, the IBLA was saying...
Isn't that correct? That's essentially what the district court found, although it put it perhaps more politely.
What the IBLA found was that the technical staff was unaware of any particular result that was desired. And the IBLA did make the mistake of saying that the technical staff was the decision maker. That, and Judge Leon was correct, it should not have said that.
In other words, the IBLA rested its decision on this issue on a proposition that was not true. Is anything mistaken about that formulation?
Well, I think the IBLA would have been fine in saying...
Let's not talk about what it would have been fine in saying. Let's talk about the veracity of what it did say.
No, the IBLA erred in saying that the technical staff was the ultimate decision maker.
So it rested its decision on a proposition that was not true.
That was incorrect, correct.
Okay. Now, don't we normally, when that happens, remand the agency to see how it would come out if it looked at things correctly?
Well,
foreclosing any particular outcome.
Right. Had it stopped there, then plainly it would have needed, a court would have needed to remand to the IBLA to ascertain whether, for further proceedings.
Yeah.
But it didn't stop there. It went on, and that was the primary focus of its decision, to evaluate the technical evidence, and based on that, to conclude that as to these four leases, there was not substantial evidence of hydrocarbon.
Technically, on issue number six, after this mistaken sentence, it says, additionally, as addressed more fully below, the record developed in the hearing process clearly supports MMS's decisions to exclude the leases. Right? Okay. Now, is there anywhere a finding by the IBLA that the contrary outcome would have been unlawful?
Your Honor, I think an outcome to leave the leases in the units?
Right, right.
I believe this goes to your question of whether it's a close case or a clear case.
A judgment call or clear legal preclusion, right.
The regional director was not applying the correct legal standard.
I understand that. At least I understand the interior's position on that. But what I'm asking is there a finding by the IBLA that, looking at the regulations and the facts correctly, Reed's preferred decision, including the four leases in the unit, was unlawful?
I believe there is in its handling of one of the earlier issues, I think five, where it said that Dr. Reed's view that leases should be left in their units regardless of the application of the standard was not appropriate.
That's a good proposition. You aren't hearing me. The question is there a finding that the regulations clearly preclude the lawful continuation of the leases in the unit?
I don't think there's one finding, Your Honor. I would rely on its finding that the criteria are clearly not met. That the evidence clearly does not support continued inclusion of these leases in the units under the proper legal standard. And that is the distillation of the pages and pages and pages of specific findings that the ALJ made, which the IBLA adopted. The IBLA, I want to point out, never found, as a matter of fact, what would have happened had Carolita Kellor never had this conversation. They simply said that it was credible that there was a conversation. That's the extent of what the ALJ found. It was credible that there was a conversation. But it's a leap to go from there to a finding of the ALJ as to what would have happened. Nobody knows what would have happened because 40 leases had never come up at the same time. There was more evidence at this point in time, the late 1999, of all of this seismic evidence that had been developed. The technical staff was in agreement that the legal standard was not met. MMS headquarters had a right to be involved in this decision for any reason. And the notion...
For any reason? As carrying the water for politicians?
Your Honor, if there was no testimony that MMS ever said to anyone, get rid of those leases, I don't care what the evidence was. The testimony is... We do have political opposition. We need to look carefully about this to make sure that we're on all four squares.
It isn't the case that MMS has the lawful right to intervene on any basis whatsoever.
Now, I didn't mean to say that, Your Honor, but it's not the regional director who is solely responsible for unitization decisions, that the chain of authority from the secretary down through to MMS and through MMS provides for retained authority of superiors. That's what I was trying to say.
Could you point me, and maybe if you can't do it now, perhaps in a letter to the court, what is the strongest finding by the IBLA for the proposition that the law required this outcome, the outcome that the board reaches, as opposed to making it the better outcome?
Your Honor, I would need to look for a specific one. But the overall point is that the Department of the Interior provides a process for correction of initial decisions that you can't even get judicial review without this process. That was a completely fair process without any allegation of political pressure whatsoever.
Anything further?
I just wanted to address, if I might, the waiver point Judge Williams had been questioning about whether there was opportunity to make the remedial argument. We believe that there was, that originally counsel is correct that Era and Noble argued in the alternative. They wanted the decision reversed outright, but if the IBLA would not reverse the decision outright on any of its seven grounds, then it asked for a hearing before the IBLA. After the September 2004 decision of the IBLA, when it said that there was not adequate explanation in the decision and that the record provided was not clear enough to make an outright reversal or affirmance and that there would have to be further proceedings, at that point MMS said, then let's remand it to the regional director for an explained decision. And at that point, Era and Noble opposed that remand, so that their arguments now that somehow there's something special about the expertise of the regional director doesn't ring true, because they had the chance in 2004 to have the case remanded, and they strongly opposed remanding it to the regional director. Then in March 2005, they got the videotaped testimony of Dr. Reed. That was 2 months before the rest of the hearing began, and MMS was still arguing, let's remand it, and Era and Noble were still saying, no, let's go forward to an evidentiary hearing. At that point, they knew everything they know now. They could have said to the IBLA. Let's stop this hearing. Perhaps let's do this hearing in two parts. We'll look at the political opposition piece first, and then if there's not a clear resolution, we could go on to the merits. But they went on to a 12-day evidentiary hearing on the merits. The ALJ then took the time to draft a 109-page opinion primarily on the merits. The IBLA then reviewed that in issuing its decision, so that Era and Noble did have a clear opportunity after March 2005 to say to the IBLA, if you credit Dr. Reed's testimony, then that's all you need to know, whether he was right, whether he was wrong. We're entitled to that decision. And they never said that. They said the opposite. They said, let's have an evidentiary hearing based on all the evidence and decide the merits of this case.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for appellants, a couple of minutes.
Judge Williams, in response to the questions you raised, I believe the findings are inconsistent with the possibility of their being interpreted to mean that the decision by Regional Director Reed must have been unlawful. And I refer specifically to finding of fact number 48, where the ALJ described Dr. Reed's testimony as convincing and then said that, quote, the excluded leases would not have been removed from their respective unit if the decisional responsibility had remained with him, that the data was susceptible to different interpretations, and that a plausible interpretation of the data supported maintaining the leases in their respective units. This is a situation in which experts could disagree, but he was the person who had the decisional authority and the discretionary decisional authority, and his testimony to that effect was found by the ALJ to be convincing, credible, et cetera, et cetera. So clearly, there's no finding that leaving the leases in their unit would have been unlawful. To the contrary, the ALJ endorsed.
Well, it's one thing to credit testimony, and it's another thing to find lawful ruling. I mean, I'm not going to take that too far, but they are two different things.
Well, his having reached those conclusions would have made the decision to leave the leases in their units lawful.
I thought you argued this in your brief, basically that the board had no authority to make a de novo decision. Is that your position?
Well, our view is that based upon the factual findings that had been made with respect to the effect of political influence and the decision that would otherwise have been made, that at that point, yes, the IBLA's job was done. And that is our view.
Did you want to say something else? Go ahead, and then I'll...
Going to this issue of waiver, yeah. I do want to point out that after the evidentiary hearing was ordered, we filed, and it's J323, a pleading that said that to our view, the issues to be addressed at the hearing included, quote, whether MMS's decision was unduly tainted by impermissible political considerations, end quote. I do not think there was any waiver of that argument. And perhaps most importantly, the IBLA didn't think there would have been a waiver of that argument because the IBA explicitly addressed the political influence issue in its decision.
Anything further?
No, I'm done.
All right, we'll take the case under advisement. Thank you.